Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome back one last time this week. It is the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here, Joe Metz there, here also, there, somewhere. Joe, what's up, man? 11 games as we kick off the weekend, or get started to kick off the weekend here on Friday. What's up?
Yeah, it's been a pretty consistent NBA week in terms of scheduling. I think it was like 9 games, 8 games, 9 games, and then today, Thursday, we had 5. But yeah, biggest one on tap, 11 games. A lot of good games on a high total, so excited to dive in.
Yeah, it was a lot. We got plenty of news Thursday night that'll help us, obviously, as we prepare for the slate and do this podcast. But there's obviously going to be a ton changing around the NBA, so just make sure, again, like always, but especially this year, if you're planning on playing NBA DFS, plan on not leaving your house for a little bit that evening, because it hits the fan for sure.
Yeah, late swapping has definitely been a massive edge this season. I mean, not that it ever isn't, but I think more so. Like, look at Isaiah Roby. I don't know if you saw the whole thing in Discord with Isaiah Roby on Wednesday. He was over 50% owned in cash games. He didn't touch the court. Luckily, we had some sharp people. Eddie, especially in our Discord, warned people that he might not play. This was all over the stream. Didn't come out for warm-ups. Our whole community pivoted off and made a lot of money. So, this is not going to be the last time something like that happens, whether it be because of the health and safety protocols or just the lack of information that we seem to have this year compared to years past.
Happened with Tyler Hero tonight, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It did. But that was weird, though. He got ruled out after the game started. I got the notification, which is weird.
Yeah. It's a crazy season, obviously. Also, real quick, and then we got to get in these games, but I thought there would be some normalcy to the second release of the All-Star voting, and it got worse because Alex Caruso.
There's not. De'Aaron
Fox isn't even on the list. Listen, I talked about it with my buddy today. The NBA, assuming they still have the All-Star game and everything, they're not going to let Klay Thompson make the All-Star team, I would imagine. Same with Alex Caruso. But I will say, if De'Aaron Fox doesn't get in, a guy who I believe has not made an All-Star team, I know he doesn't want to play in the All-Star game. Nobody really does, but just the accomplishment of being an All-Star. If he doesn't make it, there's something seriously wrong with this league. And I'll leave it at that. But yeah, it continues to be a joke. Let's get to these games. Minnesota and Charlotte start this off, and 2 point guards with injuries. D'Angelo Russell, he's been injured for forever now. Didn't play the last game with the leg. He's already been ruled out for this game against Charlotte. And then Devontae Graham, he's missed the last 5 games with a groin injury. He's questionable again. Let's start with Minnesota here. We've been talking a lot about Anthony Edwards on this podcast as of late. The shot volume went down last game, but this is, and that obviously was more so due to the fact that Karl Anthony Towns, who was doubtful heading into that Clippers game, ended up playing, played 31 minutes, took 15 shots. So for the first time in a while, and happily to do so because I'm glad he's back, we got to talk about Karl Anthony Towns in DFS. 9,300 on DraftKings against a weak Charlotte interior that allows the most rebounds per game to opposing centers. Not to mention, we also have D'Angelo Russell out once again. Now, the sample is kind of all over the place because Russell and Towns together have missed so much time this season, but there is still somewhat of a sample. Karl Anthony Towns in 71 minutes, almost a 25% usage rate, 1.43 fantasy points per minute. Where does he stack up for you among the centers and overall players on the slate? Because 11 games, there's a ton of options.
Yeah, it's hard not to love Towns in this matchup, especially. I hate to say I'm going to rule him out on FanDuel specifically, but at 10-1, he's more expensive than Nikola Jokic against the Kings, only a few hundred less than Jokic against the Thunder. So there obviously are better spots on FanDuel, but on DraftKings, he at 9-3 is a player that I would 100% love in a two center lineup, especially because I don't think the ownership is going to be there because it's only his second game back after missing, 13 games because of COVID or something like that. I don't think the first game was an appropriate representation of what to expect going forward either. Had a 23.2% usage rate. Obviously, getting up to speed, we expect that to normalize, especially with D'Angelo Russell out. Minutes should continue to trend upwards, and obviously his volume, you said he took 15 shots. I would expect that to creep closer to the 18 to 22 range, especially in a matchup like Charlotte is one that we've attacked in the post just about all season. They rank 24th or worst against skilled centers, rebounders, rim protectors, and stretch bigs. So there's really not a hole in this matchup for him. So I think he's a phenomenal tournament play on this slate.
Yeah, I will have plenty of exposure to him. Towns posted up about six times in that last game. I expect that number to go up. He's also a guy that's been spotting up a lot over the past couple of years. We know Charlotte can be beat there. Who else from this team interests you? Because Anthony Edwards is 6,100. He has a 30% usage rate with both Towns and Russell off the floor, but with just Russell off the floor, it's still at 28%. He's still taking plenty of shots, right under a fantasy point per minute, and we know the production has been better for him lately. 6,100, like, I still would rather play him than Ricky Rubio at 6K. I think there's a higher ceiling. And then I kind of like Malik Beasley here as well. Why did I say Malik Beasley? Yeah, Malik Beasley. What?
Yeah.
Well, I clicked on his profile, and I saw he still has the Denver jersey on, I think. And I was like, wait, what? Completely threw me off guard for a second. But 7,100 seems like a lot, but you got to remember, Russell's still out. So the minutes are going to be there regardless. He's the guy that's been spotting up the most for this team. 5.5 points per game off spot ups is top 20 in the league. He's shooting around 46% off spot up shots this year. And I talked about it. Charlotte, they give it up from three. They give it up to spot up shooters, giving up a league leading 41.1 spot up points per game. Dude, Joe, the next closest team is Miami at 36. So, like, they are just the stone.
That's
almost worst.
10. Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, I love the Malik Beasley call. I think I'm more comfortable with Anthony Edwards when you factor in price, especially on an 11-game slate. The price for Malik Beasley is a bit more restrictive, but it's hard not to love both of these guys, and especially when you look at Ricky Rubio's price, it almost makes them just look more enticing at their prices. I think the volume is a bit more reliable on Anthony Edwards' end, even though it was down a bit last game. But then again, I think the peripherals, while they're not, you know, anything to write home about and not like a massive double-double threat, I think they are more reliable on Malik Beasley's end than they are Anthony Edwards' end. So I think it really depends on your roster construction. I do – the other big thing with Edwards now, as opposed to being power forward eligible the last week roughly, he's back to his shooting guard small forward eligibility, so that does open up a lot more for him on DraftKings.
Let's go to Charlotte. If Devontae Graham is back, my interest in Charlotte is like it's still a good matchup against Minnesota, and you can make the case that they get worse defensively with Towns in there. I feel like whatever minutes they were giving to Ed Davis and Naz Reid, like Naz Reid fouls a lot, but we know Towns is not the greatest defender. So, but if Graham's back, I don't want to pay $8,600 for LaMelo Ball. Terry Rozier is at 6,600, but he just seems to have like the games like he had last game where he can't miss, and then he'll have other games where he's not offering a ton of peripherals. Gordon Hayward's the one that is kind of fine regardless at 7,300. He's been underwhelming in his last three games, but 7,300 is a really nice price tag for him in this spot. What are you doing with Charlotte if Graham's out, and what are you doing if he's in?
If he's in, I think I'm going right back to that wait-and-see approach because obviously, I wouldn't expect LaMelo to be regulated to the bench or relegated, for that matter.
Yeah, I don't know how they.
But we don't know how they're really going to shake these minutes up. You know, LaMelo is still, you know, at 7,700 on FanDuel. I think he is more enticing, regardless of the status of Devontae Graham. But I wouldn't trust him in cash like I have been if Devontae Graham is healthy. If he's out, I'm totally okay going right back to LaMelo. I think Terry Rozier is a fine play at his price, but he obviously profiles more of a tournament play based on his, you know, his kind of one-dimensional archetype with the scoring. So it all obviously hinges on Graham's status because that will completely change whether or not I even care to target this team.
Anybody else stand out? Do you have interest in Zeller? PJ Washington is getting a little bit more interesting at 5,600, I believe his price tag is. Like they're not. Like, he's obviously not as exciting as he was earlier, but, like, Bismack Biyombo is hardly part of the rotation. So they're still giving Washington, some solid minutes at center. 5,600. I could see him having a, you know, 14-10 type game like he can have, but he's been, you know, relatively bad as of late.
Yeah, I out of the front court, I don't hate the PJ Washington call, especially because his price is coming down, but I think I do still prefer Zeller. Minutes are obviously more volatile with the return of PJ Washington, you know, over those last four games. Directly after a string of three straight games over 30 or 31 minutes, he had 22, 19, 26, and 22. So there is much more risk baked in, but this is a very good matchup with Karl Anthony Towns. I trust Cody Zeller to stay out of foul trouble. He's been able to do that most of his career. So if you do pay down at center, I think he's a fine option.
All right, let's go to New York and Washington. Huge news in this game. Bradley Beal out. He will rest for this game. I mean, Westbrook, how popular is he going to be? 9K. The game's, you know, he hasn't gone for 50 in three straight. He's been at right around 42 over the last two. Got priced up to 9K, but I mean, my goodness. His usage rate is at 39.7% with Bradley Beal off the floor. And he has identical assist and rebounding rate to 28%. Like, how? I know New York plays slow. I know they've been good defensively this year. I also don't think matchup matters when you're going to have a 40% usage rate.
Correct. I mean, he that 39-plus percent usage rate without Bradley Beal on the court is the highest usage rate in the NBA by over 2% if you factor that in. I mean, Bradley Beal is the league leader in usage rate. He's off the floor. 9K flat does not do Russell Westbrook justice here. I know I don't want to say he was disappointing last game because he still, you know, he still had over 40 fantasy points. We just would have loved a ceiling game at that 8-4 price.
The rebounds were like the lowest it's been in a game he wasn't limited in a long time, too.
Yeah, and that's crazy to say because he still had 6 rebounds. So, like, for any other guard, like, oh, that's a good rebounding total. But Russell Westbrook,
yeah, dude, if Colin Sexton gets 6 rebounds, I'd be ecstatic.
You'd be throwing a parade at that. 9K, regardless of the matchup, is just too cheap, especially without Bradley Beal. So I think he is going to be one of my cornerstones on DraftKings tomorrow. He's been consistently within the upper 9K range on FanDuel. Finds himself at 8,700 on FanDuel tomorrow, where he is, in my opinion, a stone cold lock.
Yeah, I don't know how you get away from that. You don't need us to tell you that Russell Westbrook with Bradley Beal out is a good play. The question is, do these secondary wizards interest you? Raul Neto, does he get in the starting lineup, or do they go with obviously like Garrison Matthews, maybe Jerome Robinson, see more minutes? Raul Neto's been relatively productive when he started this year. He's averaging nearly 11 points, 3 assists, 2.5 rebounds, over a steal per game. That's only in 23 minutes as a starter. So, like, he could easily play more than that in this game. Played 27 last game off the bench against Toronto. He's 4,200. And then you have, like I mentioned, Garrison Matthews at 3K, Jerome Robinson at 4,100. And Jerome Robinson's been all over the place in terms of minutes and whether he's been part of the rotation or not. Maybe this is a spot where they get to him. Maybe they go to Troy Brown. Who else benefits here with Bradley Beal out? Because Beal, you know, the league leading scorer, the league leader in usage rate, like, so, Westbrook, he's going to do a lot of it, but he can't do all of it.
Yeah, I struggle to get to Raul Neto on an 11 game slate unless we get confirmation that he won't have a minutes limit. Last game with Russell Westbrook out, which was the game that was 2 games ago, he was on an 18 to 20 minute limit. Obviously, with Westbrook in and Beal in last game, we didn't see him really get up there minutes. Or he had 27, I guess, last game. So that would make me think that unless we hear something, I would assume his minutes limit is off.
Especially if they're resting Beal. It's not like Beal can't play. They're just straight up resting him.
Correct. So that would tell me that they have to be confident in their backups. Yeah. If he starts, I think he's one of the best value plays on the slate. But if he doesn't start, I'm trying to figure out who would. Like, I think Troy Brown would be someone, like you said, that they could pull in. He has picked up a handful of DMPs lately, but obviously we saw him step into the bubble and really contribute in almost every category.
Troy Brown was like the quietest 18, 6, and 5 player in the bubble last
year. I think he got up to close to like 7K in the bubble last year.
He was trying to find a good comp for him. He had a triple
double, I'm pretty sure, in the bubble.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a good comp for him in terms of his volume and touches during the bubble. He wasn't like Jokic or LeBron or touches, but he was like in that like Ben Simmons.
It was like 70-ish.
Kind of like Jimmy Butler's doing right now, like 75 to 80 touches. I like Troy Brown in fantasy, and it really depends on who starts because all these guys are cheap. I mean, Troy Brown is he's minimum salary. I know he's been all over the place. He only played 2 minutes last game, but
I mean, so hypothetically, say Raul Neto starts, and you don't want to play him for you want to like obviously leverage some ownership. How confident would you be in playing Troy Brown? Jesus, excuse me. Assuming he gets playing time, like how confident would you be he cracks the as a significant part of the rotation?
On a scale of 1 to 10, probably like a 4.5 or a 5, just because it could be Garrison Matthews, it could be Jerome Robinson, it could just be Ish Smith and Raul Neto.
I don't think they go big and put like Denny at the 2 because I think he's like 6'9".
Yeah, and they could get weird and technically put Russ at like the 3 and play Neto and Ish Smith and then just have Russ still handle the like. I've seen them have a lineup with those three on the floor this year. I think it was earlier in the year. They could do a lot of different things. Like Isaac Bunga could get run. I don't really care. I'm not playing him. He's like the lowest usage player ever. But just keep an eye on the starting lineup. Denny's minutes are going to be there regardless. And at 3,900, I've been kind of playing him in some spots where I haven't found value anyway. He's over a fantasy point per minute with Beal off the floor this year. Not a crazy usage rate. It's only 18%. But like Westbrook and Rui just dominate the usage in the split. With Beal off the floor, like I mentioned, Westbrook over almost 40%. Rui's at 26%. The next highest usage rate on the team with Beal out is Raul Neto at 18.6. Or sorry, Alex Len at 22, but that's in a really small sample.
Yeah. See, it's almost what's weird is like our sample size with Beal out is obviously exponentially smaller than it is with Westbrook out. So I almost feel less confident in these ancillary pieces than I do when Westbrook's out because there's a bit more uncertainty. I think Neto, like you said, would probably be my default number one outside of Westbrook if he starts. Rui probably number two. I think Denny would make for a very solid play as well. I'm not going to sit here and attempt his last name, but Denny for 3,900. That's a lot easier than I thought. Wow.
Yeah, I said the same thing when he got drafted. I was like, all right, well, I'm sure to call him Denny, and then I realized it was not that difficult.
Yeah. 3,900 for him is a pretty good price, given the minutes in the mid to upper 20s right now. So I think, to me, it's just going to depend on what the starting lineup is. I'll take Westbrook and probably one more piece of that starting lineup who I think will soak up a lot of volume, who are going to be the shooters.
All right, let's go to the New York side. Good matchup here. The problem is can we trust this backcourt? Derrick Rose made his debut last game, played 20 minutes, which was, Emmanuel Quickley,
I'm not sure
what he did wrong, but he played one more minute than Derrick Rose. He looked like he was about to take Alfred Payton's job. Payton had some really good games, too, and then they traded for Derrick Rose.
He didn't do anything wrong. It's just the fact that Tom Thibodeau, someone compared on Twitter, Tom Thibodeau's affection with Derrick Rose.
And is former Bulls in general.
Yes, yes, is that of Adam Gase's with Frank Gore. And that was very, very accurate to me. Like, Emmanuel Quickley does not deserve to be buried in this depth chart. He should be their starting point guard.
Yeah. Are we playing any Peyton Quickley? You can't play Quickley at 5K.
I don't think I can play. I don't know why
Rose is the most expensive of the three. He's 5,300. That's an easy pass.
I'll be honest, at 9,100, like, the matchup is phenomenal, but I can't sit here and say I'm like 100% confident playing Julius Randle either, because that last game with Derrick Rose, he was like a direct victim of the siphon usage rate. Obviously, we know Derrick Rose is going to always be a high usage player. He was the highest usage player on the Pistons this season, came in, had a 27% usage rate in that first game, brought Julius Randle down from about 30% to 26%. I see Julius Randle's production being somewhere in between what we saw that first game with Derrick Rose and what we saw earlier in the season. I just don't know if on an 11-game slate I'm going to take that jump until we really see this rotation normalize and really how the offense flows.
It's weird. Washington's a matchup we target, but I'm kind of with you. Like, Randle's a fine play for sure, but I'm not really on RJ Barrett. I'm not on the point guards. Mitchell Robinson definitely has a ceiling, and he's cheap enough. But, yeah, like, New York's not even that enticing for me on this slate. Again, there's a lot of games.
Yeah, I agree. The one guy that actually does interest me a lot, RJ Barrett for $6,100 in this matchup is very enticing at a pretty thin small forward position. Obviously, we'll lose some of that ball handling with Derrick Rose, but I've always said RJ Barrett. I think he's a much better player off the ball. He's one of the best, I should say, best slashers in the NBA, but he is a very, very good slasher. And at $6,100 on DraftKings, $5,300 on FanDuel, I think he makes up for a fine play at that position.
All right, let's keep moving. San Antonio at the Atlanta Hawks. Still no DeAndre Hunter or LaMarcus Aldridge for their respective teams. Rajon Rondo also out for the Hawks. Let's start with the Spurs. Solid pace-up spot here against a weak defense. DeMar DeRozan is, for the most part, I mean, last game was an exception, but prior to that, he's been really good again. He's 8K on DraftKings. We know that his usage rate has been relatively massive. It's around 28% with Aldridge off the floor. I like the spot for him against the Hawks, a team that is allowing the fifth most isolation points per game. Aldridge is currently averaging 4 points per game off isolation. That's the fourth most in basketball. He's shooting 58% in isolation. It's kind of crazy. I'm perfectly fine with him. We also saw Devin Vassell start on Tuesday. That was interesting. He played 24 minutes at 3,900. Which is even more interesting because Lonnie Walker's back, but they decided to bring him off the bench. Obviously, they have Derek White back too. DeJounte Murray, 6,800. This seems like a DeJounte Murray game as well, right? Pace-up game against a Hawks team. Yes, they have Trae Young, but it's a ball-dominant point guard that can definitely turn the ball over. This definitely seems like a game where we see DeJounte Murray go for like 18, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's going to be a spot where we can. I mean, we shouldn't be able to get him at lower ownership in this matchup, but I think we will because of how hard he burned people. He had that ceiling game where he had 8 steals, and then he came back in 26 minutes, shot 4 of 10, only had 2 assists, 4 boards, and had a pretty abysmal game. So I think at 6,800, especially given his price went up after the matchup, it is a good spot to take advantage of him at lower ownership. I do expect Lonnie Walker to remain on the bench. I wouldn't be surprised to see Derek White go back in the starting lineup. Lonnie Walker didn't start last game and had a minutes limit because he was dealing with an illness. I don't know how severe it was. Obviously, it wasn't COVID. But I don't know because I expect his minutes limit to be lifted as long as he's feeling better. Derek White obviously back. I don't know if I can trust any of the off guards given even in a good matchup. I will be totally comfortable, though, going back to DeMar DeRozan at 8K. It's really hard for me not to. I still think he's a bit underpriced on the season. He's posted a usage rate over tw Ooh, excuse me, I just over 28% this season from what I'm seeing. The last game, he only posted a 21% usage rate, but his assist rate was at 42.9%, so a bit more of a distributor role, except I do expect that to kind of go back to DeAndre Murray. Plus, his rebounds have been up this year, as you and I have talked about with LaMarcus Aldridge out, and even with him in, he's played a lot more time at the four, where I do think he'd be able to pull John Collins, who I'd argue is a pretty versatile four, but he's not necessarily a good enough perimeter defender to be able to contain someone like DeMar DeRozan if he pulls them out of the paint,
I mean, John
especially in the
Collins
defense.
has been crossed over more than anybody in the league this year, so.
And
And
the
it's not even
mid-range,
his fault because he's
DeMar.
getting crossed up by like Kevin Durant and Kyrie and like just a bunch of these switches, or he's
Yeah.
playing against fours that are like the most gifted scorers. Like, and it's just like,
He's
all right.
probably in a lot of the NBA top shots that people have
Yeah.
behind.
So, yeah, I think that's
Yeah,
a
I
sneaky
still think
good spot for
DeRozan's fine
DeRozan.
at 8,000. I think I speaking of John Collins, like I know you've been pretty bearish on him this season, but 7,700 to me, like this is a price where
Of
you
course
might
he went
struggle
off
with
again.
it, but
Dude, it's so stupid. I'm like, okay, John Collins against Dallas. He went 16 for 21 last time. He won't do that again. He goes 13 for 18. Like, yeah. I said it was going to be a Clint Capela game, and it was not. It was a John Collins game pretty clearly. And Capela had, what, his worst game of the year, maybe? Like, it's unbelievable.
But it did cause his price to drop $500, where $8,100, I mean, center's always a hard position to justify one play in an 11-game slate because it's so deep. But $8,100 for Capella is a price that I'm willing to pay.
Yeah, he's not my favorite play of the slate or anything like that, but like I would play him at that price in this role on the Hawks against pretty much anybody. Trae Young, play him if you want. He's going to get 50. It's kind of that simple right now. He's scored 50 or more fantasy points in 9 of his last 10. The one game he didn't, he still had 41. Like, he's about as safe as it gets right now. I don't have anything else to say about Trae Young. The other piece is, Kevin Herter is locked into absolutely massive minutes right now with DeAndre Hunter and Bogdanovich out. With Gallinari's minutes coming back up in the last game, Herter still played 35 minutes. Gallinari's minutes limit was increased ahead of that game against Dallas. He played 30 at 4,800. He could be interesting again here at that price. Who do you like on the Hawks other than, I guess we already talked about Collins and Capella and Trae Young?
I do like Kevin Herter a lot. I genuinely don't really think the minutes increase for Danilo Gallinari affects him that much as long as Rajon Rondo remains out. Because with Rondo and Chris Dunn out, we'll see Herter operate as the backup point guard a lot when he's not. Obviously, he starts at the two, but when Trae Young's off the court, he'll operate as that backup point guard. So I absolutely love Kevin Herter. 6K on DraftKings is fine, but I'm much more inclined to play him on FanDuel, where he's 5,300 at shooting guard. So he kind of profiles as a perfect shooting guard, too, to pair with someone like a DeMar DeRozan or some, if you want to stack this game, or someone just in the high tier salary that also provides a nice amount of security relative to the other shooting guards in that, you know, $500 to $5,500 range. I'm fine with Gallinari. He's still a rather scoring dependent, but as long as that minutes limit keeps going up, like until his price really catches up, especially on FanDuel where he went from 3,900 to 4,100 on this slate, 30 minutes, like I'd like to think we can rely on 28 plus minutes going forward. At 4,100, I don't care if you're a scoring dependent player. That is a level of security that's hard to find at that price range.
All right, anything else?
No, that covered it.
All right, Pelicans at the Dallas Mavericks up next. There is no injury news in this game. Literally none. That is rare. Like, not a single player.
That's been rare for this entire season.
Right. Not a single player is injured for this game. Luka, 10-9. He's good. Play him if you want. He probably should be a little bit more expensive. Obviously, you have an 11-game slate where you have Giannis and Luka and Jokic. I mean, Jokic is in a smash spot. LeBron's in a decent spot against Memphis, and especially if Davis doesn't play again. You have Kawhi. You have Dame. You have Trey. Like, it's a loaded slate, but I mean, it's Luka. It's kind of the same thing as Trae Young. Do we have anything to say about Luka?
You don't need convincing to play Luka. I just don't feel that it is 100% necessary on this 11-game slate.
What happened to Porzingis last game? 19 minutes, and it didn't even state an injury after the game. He's not on the injury report. He just played 19 minutes.
And it's not like he was playing incredibly poorly either. Like, he wasn't making, like, mental
defensive mistakes. He had three fouls in the second quarter, but he still played. That means he only played 6 minutes in the second half because he played over 13 minutes in the first half.
Yeah,
and he didn't play to close the game.
Like, happen again.
Yeah, he sat the last almost 9 minutes of the game and didn't play in a close game. So I don't know if it was like a benching. Like, he shot 6 of 14. Maybe I guess he just didn't play well defensively. I don't know. But that was pretty interesting. So if you're looking at some minutes there, like obviously Maxi Kleber played more. I guess he played the same amount of minutes he usually does. But you know that it wasn't an injury from Kristaps Porzingis. So unless something pops up during the day on Friday, I expect him to play and probably play his usual allotment of minutes, but that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I trust that his minutes go back to normal, especially in this matchup where they will need a bit more size. I just, much like Luka, there are not only a handful of other options I prefer in this price range, I just don't know if you need to go here. Like, unlike last season, you, me, and Javi vented about it. You vented about it every slate New Orleans has been on. Like, the way Stan Van Gundy has coached this team just has created such a
environment. I'm going to do it again because this should be the spot for Zion Williamson because Dallas is so
bad around the rim.
And they're so bad against the roll man. They are a bottom 5 in points per game allowed. They allow the second highest field goal percentage at the rim. I still like Zion at 8K. I'm going to play him, but this should be the spot for him. He continues to score at a ridiculous rate. Like, he is so efficient at scoring the basketball. Mm-hmm. And if he continues, like, he's been running a little bit more pick and roll as the ball handler, which has been good. If Zion has a ceiling peripheral game, not just let alone a ceiling scoring game, he can break a slate. He has not gone for 50 fantasy points since Christmas. Since Christmas. And it's not even because he's... It's not even because he's been bad.
Only 50? I can't think of more than one, maybe two games where he's had 50 plus this season.
Like, it hasn't been. He's lived in that 44.5 to like 45 range. It's,
which isn't terrible.
No, and he's never like 9K, so you're fine with it. But just given the player, he should have more 60 fantasy point games. It's just, I'm not going to talk about the offense, but I do like Zion in this game. At 8,200, Brandon Ingram's fine too. I prefer Zion in this matchup. Josh Hart is playing really well and carved out a huge role right now. He played 40 minutes against Houston and went crazy. Played 27 minutes last game against Chicago. We know the rebounds are going to be there. 4,700 seems like a bit of a steep price tag with everybody healthy. But, you know, you and I have talked up Josh Hart for a while now. We like him.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, not many guards provide the peripheral upside, specifically rebounding upside, that he does. And he's never really priced at a point that makes it tough to play him. Like, $4,700 is a perfect price if you need to fit one more player in your lineup. So I do like Josh Hart in this game. Outside of him and some Zion, though, like, I don't hate Lonzo Ball at $6,700, especially in this matchup. You know, Luka can't, like, I mean, Dallas as a team has been better against guards. Luka personally can't guard a broom. But the perk with Lonzo is that he's not really a scoring-reliant individual. Assists and rebounds have kind of been switching off which one he performs better in on a game-by-game basis. But at the end of the day, like, he's going to give you peripheral. So I don't mind him at 6,700. I think he's one of the safer mid-range point guards on the slate.
Moving on to Detroit and Boston. These two teams will be playing on the second end of a back-to-back here. Boston's closing out a game against Toronto right now. They're about to win. Maybe Jaylen Brown says because he just came back, but
yep. Detroit looks like in the middle of their game against Indiana. Domantas Sabonis is doing whatever he wants with them right now.
Well, too bad he didn't do it against Brooklyn. I think Jaylen Brown's not having the greatest game. It's about to be over, so he's going to finish with an underwhelming game: 10 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds.
How many minutes did he play?
31. But he's. He shot 2 of 13 from the field. I mean, very
the volume's always going to be there.
Him a lot at 7,800. He's an 8K player, in my opinion, especially if Kemba sits. Second of back-to-back, we've seen Kemba sit. Kemba's been playing 30 to 32 minutes max, but he's such a high-usage player when he's out there. You take Kemba off the floor, still no Marcus Smart. If Kemba's out, I love Jaylen Brown here. If he's in, I still really like Jaylen Brown here.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with his price. This is one of those prices, much like Russell Westbrook, where you're gonna, if you get a floor game at this price, it's still gonna be around that 5x, so you can totally live with it. If Kemba's out, he becomes an absolutely phenomenal play. If Kemba's out, Peyton Pritchard becomes a really interesting play at 3,800. Marcus Smart obviously remains out. Brad Stevens has seemed much more inclined to play, obviously more inclined to play Peyton Pritchard than Jeff Teague this season.
Pritchard's played 28 minutes tonight, by the way. I'm sure he's closing this fourth quarter because it's a 14-point game. But, yeah, 28 minutes, and he's got 20 points and 5 rebounds.
Yeah, so I'm unfortunate that will probably drive his ownership up if Kemba's out. But, I mean, it is an 11-game slate. This is the fifth game that we've talked about. And so far, pending a starting lineup, there's really only been one true value play in Raul Neto that is one that, like, stands out as a massive value. So it's so far pretty starved for value, which is why I think Peyton Pritchard, as Kemba's out, is going to be probably over popular, but also a play that I would be completely comfortable with in cash games.
By the way, Peyton Pritchard was not in this game just now, like during the fourth quarter. Like the starters have still been in for Boston. So that means Peyton Pritchard played 28 minutes without blowout run, and Jeff Teague has been a healthy scratch. He hasn't even stepped foot on the floor. So, yeah.
So that is a very good sign for Peyton Pritchard. Chris Boucher, meanwhile, is back and getting the blowout run. And Chris Boucher is now, this is his fifth game in a row, absolutely dominating.
How many blocks does he have?
He's at 5 right now.
I was about to say, I know he has 12 and 6, but I couldn't see the blocks.
Yep.
Yeah, he's
five
absurd.
Fouls, but I mean, that hasn't stopped him.
Yeah, Peyton Pritchard could, if Kemba's out, he might actually be the chalk. We'll have to keep an eye on that, especially after playing well and playing so many minutes tonight. I like Jaylen Brown. Tatum obviously gets a bump without Kemba. Like, those three become really strong options against a weak Detroit defense. For Detroit, Mason Plumlee was out tonight with an elbow injury. We saw Isaiah Stewart start. He is 3,100 on DraftKings. He's center only, but at that price, I mean, you look at what Isaiah Stewart's doing right now. 9.5 minutes off in the fourth quarter. Stewart has played 26 minutes. He has 13-6.
Yeah, I mean, if he starts again, I mean, even if he doesn't start, I think he's done more than enough to warrant a spot in the rotation on a slate that's starved so far, especially for front court value. I don't hate the play. I do have a hard time, though, seeing Mason Plumlee miss back-to-back games with bursitis, excuse me. It's typically an injury that I mean, it's different in a how do I explain it? Basketball is a contact sport, but it's not one like football where this is an injury that can very easily get re-aggravated over and over. So I have a hard time seeing him sit two games in a row, but because it is a back-to-back, I think the potential is higher than if it was like an island game and they played again on Saturday. So if Plumlee's out, I do think Isaiah Stewart will be, much like Peyton Pritchard, if Kemba Walker is out, one of the most popular plays on the slate. But $3,100, his price has literally not adjusted at all. The only knock on Stewart is the fact that he doesn't carry power forward eligibility, where on FanDuel, I believe, yep, he's still a power forward on FanDuel. So I like the play on both sides, just allows a bit more flexibility on FanDuel.
Closing out Detroit, Jeremy Grant, not my favorite play in the slate, but he's still priced pretty fairly at 7,500. And I think DeLon Wright's a little too cheap at 6K flat. Not having a great game tonight, but nobody on the Pistons really is. He's still handling the ball a lot. He's averaging around 80 touches per game over the last 10 games or so. It's a pretty high number. I think he's perfectly fine at 6K.
Yeah, I think the minutes are going to be there. I don't, like, while Dennis Smith's are going to ramp up, I truthfully don't really expect Dennis Smith to ever be a massive part of this rotation. He hasn't been able to stick with one rotation for the length of his career. So I don't know why that would change. And DeLon Wright is typically a play that can provide peripherals in just about every category, but he also never comes in as a popular player, which makes me like him a bit more. And this is Boston has not a defense like they were last year or the year before. It's definitely one you can attack. And obviously not that Kemba's a worthwhile defender, but I would rather target a rookie like Peyton Pritchard than Kemba Walker.
All right. Clippers and Bulls. Paul George still out. He's going to miss, I think, one more game, it looks like. And then obviously Otto Porter, Larry Markkanen still out for Chicago. Same with Wendell Carter Jr. Play Kawhi Leonard.
Yes, 100%. He is still too cheap. I don't
understand why they haven't priced him over $10K, knowing that Paul George, like, we knew Paul George wasn't going to play all week. Like, we knew he wasn't going to play in these games all week. We knew
and
that.
And Kawhi Leonard just, I don't want to say he came off a ceiling game.
Kawhi had one bad game, and he still, like, one bad game. Yeah. It's just easy at this point. Just play him. Chicago plays fast. Their defense is terrible. Just play him. Did you see the clip of Kawhi calling for the ball in the high post? And yeah, Reggie Jackson. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine if Kawhi was actually vocal? I just hit my mic.
That is Reggie Jackson's brand of basketball, and that's why I can't stand him as a player. If that would have been LeBron instead of Kawhi, Reggie Jackson would be a DMP this game. Like, there's not a doubt in my mind. I can't, and the player I want to talk about in the Clippers is Lou Williams. I can't bring myself to play him, but he had his best game of the season last game.
And he's gonna handle the ball more, especially if Kawhi's like, all right, get Lou on the floor more. But he's back to playing 29 to 30 minutes. He's obviously benefited from no Paul George because they can just kind of move everybody up, right? Like, Kawhi can play the four at times if they need him to. They can have Zubac or Ibaka at the five, then Reggie at the one, Lou at the two, and then Marcus Morris or Nicholas Batum at the three. Yeah, I mean, against Chicago, a team that's dead last against pick and roll ball handlers, they're terrible against point guards. I think we gotta give him a look.
5,800, I just don't. I will give him a look.
If
I
this was
just
last
don't.
year, we would've been like, he's $1,200 too cheap.
Yeah, correct. He just like. There's just too much of a sour taste in my mouth right now, based on the year as a whole, where I'd like to see a string of not necessarily ceiling games like last game, but something close where he can put games like that together with consistency. I do though, like maybe that Reggie Jackson play will siphon some minutes towards Lou Williams. You never know. If you piss off your superstar like that, you are at risk of losing playing time.
Yeah,
Is
Patrick
there
Beverley
anyone else like?
returned, by the way, but he only played 18 minutes. I don't expect him to be upwards to like
That might go up to like
25 or
20,
20.
21,
I
maybe.
don't think he'll be more than like 22, which means Lou Williams should still be fine. Other than that, though, like I like targeting centers against this team. I just have not played Ibaka or Zubac pretty much all year, and I really don't plan on it. That's kind of it for
Yeah,
me
I'm
from the
in the same
Clippers.
boat. Yeah, I typically target teams against Chicago pretty heavily, but this one's just kind of easy with for me. It's really Kawhi or bust.
Kobe White and Zach LaVine set the record for what was it, most threes in a game by or was it first players to hit eight
Ran
threes each or
backcourt
something like
forever.
that in a
Yeah.
backcourt. Kobe White with a ceiling game finally. Thoughts on these two and the rest of the Bulls? Not really too heavily on my radar tonight, to be honest.
No, same. I mean, $9,200 for Zach LaVine in any matchup is one where it's starting to get to that range I've talked about where I'm a little uncomfortable playing it. Understanding that he's probably going to draw Kawhi for most of the game, it's a pretty easy fade for me. And then the rest of this team, like, Kobe White is going to have Pat Beverley on him whenever they're on the court together, which does not bode well for a player like him. And I just don't really see a path to much upside for the rest of this team now that the likes of both Patrick Williams and Denzel Valentine have been priced up a bit. I'm not going to trust Daniel Gafford no matter how much he continues to start. Thomas Satoransky is one player at 4,300 who, depending how you script, if you think this game, if you think LA is going to blow Chicago out, Satoransky may make some sense because he does receive blowout run for Chicago. And he is still cheap. He has seen 25 plus minutes a few times over the last handful of games. It's not necessarily a play I would run in like a three entry field. It'd be more of a deep field GPP play.
All right, five games left. Oklahoma City at Denver. The Thunder can continue to be banged up. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out with a knee. Theo Maledon out with for COVID protocols. He's already been ruled out. George Hill still out. Just ridiculous. Isaiah Roby is questionable. Take that for what you will.
Just, yeah. After
Discord,
last
man.
slate, no one's gonna mess with Isaiah
Yeah,
Roby.
Discord, no. FTN Discord. Be there. Thunder. Good spot against Denver. Their defense has been one we can attack. We have attacked this year. Al Horford up to 6,700. His price keeps rising, but the production's been ridiculous, and because of the injuries, he's played 34 minutes in back-to-back games. Don't
Al
take Josh
Horford at
Kelechi.
$6,700 is still like he. So prior to last game, he had attempted 39 shots over his last two games. He had 18 shot attempts last game. This is a trend that I expect to see
Although that
continue.
34-minute game was overtime, right?
Yes, it
Both
was.
of
It
them
was overtime
were.
with the Lakers, right?
Yeah, I think both Lakers game went to overtime, didn't they?
Yeah, the Lakers went to overtime twice against the Thunder and once against the
So
Pistons
that
in the
means
matter seven
Horford
plays.
would have been at his 29-minute mark that he's been at if it weren't for overtime. So,
Yeah, which is true, but
but
I
his
would
usage
argue
rate
that during those 29
skyrockets without
minutes,
SGA.
yes.
It's absolutely skyrockets. Darius Bazley, though.
He was pretty disappointing last game.
I know, but he's playing ridiculous minutes right now.
Yep, and so is, and speak of playing not just ridiculous minutes, but ridiculously productive, Hamadou Diallo has been great. Like, he was phenomenal last
Do
game.
you know how weird it looks to
I'm
see him
pulling
at
up.
7K? It's so
And
weird.
at point guard, he's a point guard on FanDuel
Yeah.
right now. But I took so the Thunder team over the last week. Obviously, this is when they've been dealing with the most of the COVID protocol issue. Let me take SGA off the court in here because these numbers on these players, especially for their prices, will really kind of bring you back down to earth and get rid of that sticker shock a bit. Like Al Horford, listen to this, over the last week, 30.6% usage rate, 40.5% assist rate. 1.79 DK points per minute.
Yeah.
That's better than like Nikola
Jokic. With that type of usage, like he doesn't have to play. He doesn't have to play 32 yeah. minutes. He can play 28, correct. 29 and still yep. be good at that price.
And then Hamidou Diallo, 26% assist rate, 23% usage rate. Darius Bazley, 20% usage rate. Although his point per minute production has been pretty bad, 0.65. He's just playing more than enough minutes where he's still a fine play. Lou Dort has a usage rate over 22%, which is not something you usually see. Like, there are so many players benefiting because there are literally no bodies for this team right now.
Yeah, I think a handful of these guys are in play. Kenrich at 51 is viable. Dort at 4,900 is playing huge minutes as well. I think he might be my favorite considering his price. I don't know why he's not a little bit higher in price. I think they're all viable for sure. For Denver, I love Jokic here. 10-7. Coming off a bad game for him, and he's still at 12-12-6. The Thunder are bad against role men, but they're also bad in the post where Jokic does more of his work. Jokic, 11 post-ups per game, second to only Joel Embiid this season. And the Thunder are allowing the fifth most post-up points per game at nearly 7 per game, the highest field goal percentage in the post at 57%. So give me all the Jokic here.
Yep, 100% agreed. And this team, like, it truthfully has pretty much been Jokic or bust for me lately. I've sprinkled in a little bit of MPJ and Will Barton as long as Gary Harris and PJ Dozier remain out, but they've been pretty volatile. 10-7 for Jokic, great price. Those two I mentioned, like Michael Porter Jr. at 6K, has the upside to win you a tournament, but I think he's far too volatile for anything more than that. $5,500 for Will Barton now that he's small forward eligible only. They took away the shooting guard eligibility that he had earlier this season. I just don't know if I can get there on an 11-game slate. And then Jamal Murray is the other piece of this team, obviously. His price is really enticing. Like $6,800 is that price where I'm totally fine targeting him in a tournament given his upside, especially stacking him with Jokic. Obviously, we've talked about the dribble handoff left and right. I just he still doesn't, even at this price, feel safe enough in smaller field or cash game entries for me.
Yeah, I agree. It has been exciting playing Jamal Murray as opposed to when he was in the bubble. Just the ceiling games haven't been there as frequently. All right, let's go to your Milwaukee Bucks at the Utah Jazz. Obviously, still no Jrue Holiday for Milwaukee. Mike Conley also once again out for the Jazz. Giannis, not the greatest matchup for him against Rudy Gobert, but Giannis is coming off an insane game against Phoenix where he scored 47, had 11 boards, 5 assists. I mean, nobody's really talking about him because he's won each of the last two, but quietly having an incredible year, making another case for MVP. What do you think of Giannis and Milwaukee? Is it just like matchup aside right now, you just continue to play Giannis and Middleton when they're priced like this?
It is, and Adam, I'm gonna give you the last four games, like so about the last 2 years against the Jazz. Try and guess what Giannis's average points, rebounds, and assists is against this team.
32, 16, and 8.
39.5, 12.3, and 5.5. So the peripheral is down a little bit, but he's averaging just under 40 points a game against this team over the last 2 years. That's really good. That's really good. Well, I mean, for some reason, like he... And this is more, I don't necessarily love the term like the eye test, but like watching, obviously I was at every Bucks game for the last 2 years working, but there's just something about like Rudy Gobert cannot stop Giannis at the rim. He can stop literally anyone else except Giannis. He puts him on a poster just about every game, gets to the free throw line. And quietly, like if you look at Giannis's game log, his free throw percentage has absolutely, I don't want to say skyrocketed, but over the last, let's go the last four games, 6-for-8, 7-11, 6-for-8, and last game, 17 of 21. So there's a couple games around 75%, one about 64%, but that is like leaps and bounds better than what he's done up to this point this season. So if he gets the free throw line with, you know, much more consistency in this game, especially one against a pretty good rim protecting team, that only heightens his upside at 10-8. And so far on the slate, like based on the options we've talked about, if I'm looking to spend all the way up, Giannis is my option.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. I have no problem Middleton either. Everybody else is not really on my radar. For Utah, Donovan Mitchell, 8,200. He's obviously been great since Conley's been out. You'll get these two games. or three games, I think it is, 30, 27, and 36 real points. His usage rate's well over 30% with Conley up the floor. 8,200, I think he's absolutely a solid option. Joe Ingles' price is coming up to 6K, but he's been very productive. Like, Utah's not cheap in this game. Even Bogdanovich, who's been playing great, he's been shooting the ball so well from three and so frequently from three lately. 6,200. His rebounds have been much better lately, which is huge for him because he's not known as a peripheral guy. We know Milwaukee can give it up from three. I have some interest in Bogdanovich, more so if I'm stacking this game. Clarkson's not cheap at 5,700, and even though Conley's out, he's not guaranteed to play 30 minutes because he's still coming off the bench. It's not like he's starting. Like, Gobert's at 7.5, which is kind of right where he should be in this matchup, I think. You know you're going to get a double-double from him. How much else will you get? Like, I think Mitchell's the best play. I'm okay for getting to Gobert, mm-hmm. but he's not a priority on the slate at center. Who do you like from Utah?
For me, it's really Mitchell and Gobert. I understand the appeal in Bogdanovich, given the Bucks' lack of success in defending beyond the arc, but 6'2 is a bit rich for my blood, given how volatile his peripherals, especially his rebounds, can be. I don't even know if I like Gobert at this price. I just don't know if he's someone I will target given all the other center eligible options we've already talked about. And then Donovan Mitchell, I mean, $8,200 is more, I don't want to say more expensive than we're used to seeing. But he typically lives in that like $7,700 to $7,900 range. I think I'd like him more in this matchup, obviously, if he were in that price range. $8,200 is still fine. But at the guard, at the specifically at the point guard position, like, because obviously he's both point and shooting guard eligible, I prefer, we'll get to John Morant, but I prefer him for $1,100 cheaper. I prefer getting up to Westbrook for 9K. Like, he's just in this awkward range where there's guys I'd rather either take the savings on below him or find his salary and spend up above him just a bit. So I'm not crossing him off, but I just don't think he'll be someone I get to.
It's fair. Let's get to John Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies. They're in LA to take on the Lakers. Anthony Davis, once again, questionable. He's missed the last two games with that Achilles injury. For Memphis, Brandon Clark rolled out again. He'll miss his fourth straight game. They obviously have had Valanciunas return. And then De'Anthony Melton will miss his third straight game with an injury. So and so is Desmond Bane. So that's Desmond Bane being out with a personal issue is notable. He's part of the rotation, yeah. Playing 26 minutes as of late. They're already without Melton. This is notable. Let's start with Memphis.
Yep. I guess,
is John Morant going to score 40 points for once? Is he going to get there? He's done it once over the last 10 games he's played.
I think he can. I don't know if this is the matchup that I would count on, though, truthfully. If there's anyone on Memphis, like, I mean, I'm going to give you the floor to talk about Jonas Valanciunas because I know how high you are on him. Usually slayed in and slayed on. He's finally been smashing. But with my sticker here is if Desmond Bane, he's obviously out. De'Anthony Melton's out. It's not a sexy play by any means, but it is kind of hard to ignore Grayson Allen even at 4,100. Now, yeah. He saw 29 minutes last game. That was with Desmond Bane active and De'Anthony Melton out.
And Melton played 26 still in that game.
Correct. Like, there are really no, besides him and Dylan Brooks.
And they haven't been, well, they don't play Dylan Brooks. Like, Brooks is probably going to start at the three.
But they're not going to play him 35 minutes.
No, they haven't all year. And then
they're not going to throw Kyle Anderson at the two. They don't have anyone else to throw at the off guard right now. Tyus Jones is a little too small for them to do that. Like, and especially without De'Anthony Melton, he's going to have to operate as the primary backup point guard. So I think this is a great spot. Like, matchup aside, I think this is a phenomenal spot for Grayson Allen to be a good value play.
Yeah, I'm with it. Jovell's fine. The matchup's obviously enhanced a bit if Davis is out. Marcus Saul's still a good defender. I just think Jovell, now that he's playing his normal minutes for the most part, and again, they won by 15. He didn't have to play much of the fourth quarter. If he plays 30 to 33 minutes at 7,200, he's going to be good. He always is. Nobody's going to play him in tournaments because this is a bad matchup, but I'm not totally opposed to it. And then, yeah, if you want to go to Ja, I still think he's due for a huge game very soon, but on this huge slate, like, I do like other plays at the position around his price tag. Like, I'd rather play DeJounte Murray. I'd rather play,
I agree.
I guess there's not that many. I'd rather play Sexton, who we'll talk about next.
Would you rather play Ja Morant for 71 or Hamidou Diallo for 7K? It's weird that we're having this debate in general.
I can't believe I'm hesitating. I might play Hamidou Diallo.
I lean Hamidou, especially given
I also think I'd rather go down to Dwan Wright at 6K. And there's a lot of value point guards we talked about.
Like, which is crazy that we're having this debate because like prior to this season, I probably would have laughed in your face if you gave me those three players and Ja Morant was the last one listed.
Ja's like good, but he's not always the greatest for fantasy because he has those games where he'll play 32 minutes instead of 36. He doesn't offer a lot from three, and he doesn't get a lot of rebounds. So it's like you're getting Trae Young like points and assists, but like half of Trae Young's points and assists. You're getting like 18 and 9 from him a lot of these games, where Trae Young goes 30 and 16 a lot of games. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why Morant just hasn't been that as exciting. I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's only $100, but if Davis is out, like you just play LeBron at 10-1. His touches are 103 per game over the last couple of Davis out. A little bit skewed because they had those overtime games, but still, you understand the usage is through the roof. You just kind of play him. Do you go to Kuzma? Do you go to Markieff Morris? Kuzma's 5,900. Like I'm not. I don't care that he's been over 30 in two straight. I'm not playing Kyle Kuzma at 5,900. I'm just not doing it.
I mean, if Anthony Davis is out, I will. I will gladly play Kyle Kuzma for 5,900. Hey, it's worked for me for two slates in a row. So
It hasn't not worked.
In a bad position, but it hasn't vaulted me to the top of any leaderboard.
You can play Kyle Kuzma. I will get potentially 40 fantasy points elsewhere. I hope a lot of people play him too because Kyle Kuzma is not good.
Is there someone in the league regarding from a fantasy perspective who you despise more? Than Kyle Kuzma. And this is coming from someone who usually does not like Kyle Kuzma whatsoever.
It's a good question. Give me a minute and I'll think about it. I'll look through the players okay. in the slate. But do any Lakers stand out other than LeBron?
I mean, other than LeBron, not really. If this team's healthy, I'm totally fine fading this game, truthfully. But aside from taking advantage of Ja Morant's price, hoping for a ceiling game, or Jonas Valanciunas in a tournament, or Grayson Allen, like this game isn't one that I have an interest in stacking, and that's kind of become typical with the Lakers games. They've just been such a good defensive team where it makes it hard to target because they end up blowing teams out, limiting production for the opponent while also limiting their starters' productions outside of LeBron. So I don't really see a ton of appeal here. You might be able to get away with a little bit of Talen Horton-Tucker if you're scripting this blowout game and Anthony Davis sits. He has seen 20-plus minutes in three of the last four games, but other than that, I think it would be getting a little too cute.
I don't have a definite answer, but I will say the last couple years, it's kind of been Gary Harris.
Yeah.
He's been the guy that I play. It's like, oh, Gary Harris is 4,200. He's going to play 35 minutes, and he scores 17 fantasy points.
Up until this season, I've been clinging on to like the Gary Harris from like 2017.
He looked like a really high-valued player that you're like, oh, if this team could get Gary Harris from Denver, like they would.
He was a player I wanted the Bucks to get. Like he would have been perfect for Giannis at that time. Thank God that they didn't even bother pursuing him because he is a shell of himself, might be a compliment at this point.
Two games left. We go to Cleveland at Portland. Same old for Portland, obviously. No McCollum, no Nurkic. Cleveland's relatively healthy. Just still no Larry Nance or Kevin Love. Cleveland definitely didn't do what I thought they could do last game against Denver. I had to have jinxed Colin Sexton because I wrote in the Game by Game article. He's almost as I'm paraphrasing, but I said he's almost as much of a lock for 20 real points as anybody right now, and he scores four real points. So that's my fault. But the price has come down to 6,600. Another solid matchup. I have no issues with Colin Sexton in tournaments. And then your guy, man, Andre Drummond. Look, they got blown out last game. Drummond didn't play much, but 8,200. I know they've been starting. Jared Allen at the four as of late, but at 8,200, it doesn't matter. And it wasn't just Drummond. Like Bickerstaff kind of took a lot of the starters' minutes down in that blowout because it got ugly early. They were down by like 30 at one point. But I will say Isaac Okoro dunked on Jokic. That was kind of cool.
I don't know. This is the game, and Andre Drummond in particular, this is going to test me more than any other time this year in terms of getting like ignoring recency bias, because I was top 5% in my FanDuel GPPs on
It
Wednesday,
made sense. I was the
but
same with Sexton. I loved him in tournaments.
I pivoted from Jonas Valanciunas, like pre-lock. I made a pivot from Jonas Valanciunas and Denzel Valentin to Andre Drummond and Danilo Gallinari, expecting Drummond to come in at lower. Drummond was only 7,700 on FanDuel. So I expect him to come at lower ownership. He was about like 25%, which was a bit disappointing, but I mean, he had 11 FanDuel points. Like, while Valanciunas had like 38 or 40, just completely destroyed my, I still finished well, but completely destroyed my chance of anything major. So this is such a good matchup, like such a good matchup. His price is still so enticing. So recency bias aside, it makes all the sense in the world to target again. And because of recency bias, there is a very high chance that he is very low owned.
I don't think people are going to play him even if he went off last game, because he just hasn't been that popular since the start of the season, where he was one of the more popular centers because he was playing 38 minutes a game and his usage rate was massive. And then Cleveland had some games that they were missing Garland or Sexton, and obviously they had other injuries and they didn't have Jared Allen at that point. And now people just don't play him as much. But like at 8,200, 32 minutes against Portland, he could go for 55. We've seen it many times. I like Sexton. I think Garland's perfectly fine at 5,700 too. He's been really good prior to last game. Since I think over his last like not 7 games, his last 7 games, averaging right around 30 fantasy points per game. He's been facilitating pretty well. Portland's bad against point guard, so I like Garland. The rest of his team's probably. I don't think you need to go to Isaac Okoro in this game. I don't think you need to go to Torian Prince, who's not even really that cheap, all things considering. So, and then Jared Allen, again, like 5,900, just. With unless Drummond's out, I probably won't go there. He could have a good game because he's really efficient, but I probably won't get there. Portland. Dame's under 10K. We haven't seen Dame have like as many like whoa, holy crap games since McCollum's been out. There's been like 2 60-point games over the last 10, but he's gonna give you like 46 to anywhere between like 46 and 60. Like that's a wide range, but I think 45, 46 is the floor. And he's under 10K. I know Cleveland's been better defensively, but it's hard to say Dame's a bad play here.
Yeah, I agree. So would you rather go Dame for 9,800 on this slate or Trae Young for 10K? Because I think Dame's going to be more popular just for based on namesake.
I would rather go Trae Young.
So would I. Okay, we can agree on that. But I agree. We haven't really seen bubble Dame with consistency like we did towards the tail end of last season, but he's still as good as Cleveland has been defensively. He's still matchup proof, and we both know
Doesn't like
this.
Sexton's been better defensively, but he can't guard Dame. Doesn't matter.
Correct. Like the ceiling's there, the volume is still there. He just hasn't been shooting the ball as well either. And obviously, assist numbers they're fine. Like last 4 games, he's at a little over 6 per game, but his assist potential does go down without a player like CJ McCollum or Yusuf Nurkic on the court. That while those players out obviously bodes well for his usage rate, it does hamper his production elsewhere. So I don't hate Dame, but for the first time this, I don't want to say first time this season, but I just don't view him as a necessary or solid cash game play. Enes Kanter for $6,900, I do like a little more than Dame from a per dollar basis, which is again really odd to say. But he obviously is going to be on the court. What I would hope probably around 32 to 35 minutes to combat on Andre Drummond, as long as Bickerstaff doesn't really screw up this rotation again for Cleveland. So that gives him a ton of ceiling potential at 6,900. We've seen him have those close to 20-20 games where he has a ton of upside at his price. Outside of those two, though, like I can't really get on board with Gary Trent's price at $5,800.
I like it actually. I think
Do
he's
you
a little
on
too
11
cheap.
games? If this was like
That yeah, that's fair.
a
In
seven,
regards to
maybe a seven,
slate,
eight game slate, I just don't know if I can. The
yeah,
volume is certainly
in
there.
regards to slate, but in general, like since McCollum's been out, I think it's been 9 games he started. He's averaging like 19 real points per game. He's playing like 36 minutes a game. 5,800, I don't hate. He would be my actually probably my second favorite player from this team, and then Cantor. And then Covington's in the same boat. Like he's been rebounding as really well lately. We'll see what Portland does tonight. This is the second night of back to back for them. They're playing Philadelphia right now. But I would rather shoot for Gary Trent's upside at 58 than Covington's lack of upside at 59.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
All right, let's close it out. Orlando at Sacramento. I mean, the Magic just, they can't stay healthy. I mean, first it was Carter Williams, then it was Fultz, then it was Aaron Gordon, then it was Evan Fournier, now it's Cole Anthony. I mean, they just started their game against the Warriors. They started Frank Mason, Bacon, Gary Clark, Ennis, and Vucevic.
Woof.
Yeah, barring anybody sitting, I mean, you just play Vucevic, right, against Sacramento.
Yeah, I think this spot, obviously Vucevic, probably the best, obviously the best play in this game, one of, still in my opinion, the best plays on the slate. But I do think, regardless of who's in or out for Sacramento, or excuse me, for New, excuse me, why am I saying New Orleans? For Orlando, my God. There are viable options on this team outside of Vucevic. Obviously, we have to see how tonight plays out, how the minutes go. But Frank Mason is probably, like, if Cole Anthony or if just Evan Fournier, not Cole Anthony, are out, Frank Mason should be viable. We saw him for two games prior. So not this game that's going on as we record on Thursday, but the games prior with Cole Anthony active before he went out on Wednesday. We saw him play alongside Frank Mason, a good enough chunk to warrant his price. And then I think Terrence Ross would be another strong play if both Cole Anthony and Evan Fournier are to miss this game. If they're in, I think both are strong plays against this defense. If one of them is out, the other one becomes very viable. It's just obviously there's a lot up in the air because one, their game just tipped off against Golden State on Thursday, and two, we have no idea how the injury report is going to shake out.
Yeah, I think we can just kind of say we'll see what happens at the end of this game. We'll talk about it in Discord and in your article and stuff like that, for sure. For Sacramento, De'Aaron Fox is playing an insane level right now. He is doing whatever he wants. He's getting to the basket. He's shooting pretty well from three, for the most part. He's taking a ton of shots, at least 20 shots in three straight. Quietly has emerged as one of the league leaders in touches per game. So at 9K, seems like a lot, but he is playing at a different level right now.
Yeah, it's you specifically have talked about De'Aaron Fox quite a bit and how it's been hard to justify, not justify his price, but really stomach it because almost it's just a level of sticker shock. At this price, like he is fully justifying, and I don't think people are going to get here. I would still rather play Russell Westbrook at 9K.
I agree.
But if you're comparing a player like De'Aaron Fox at 9K versus like a LaMelo Ball at 8'6", I'd rather go De'Aaron Fox. So I think it's just going to be a battle of who your decision is between when it comes to playing De'Aaron Fox or not. But I think he is a perfectly viable play. And obviously Orlando, regardless of injury report, they're going to be down Markelle Fultz. They're going to be down Aaron Gordon, which makes them a much more susceptible team to target in what should be a pretty good game environment. I do, though. I don't know if this is going to be a hot take or not. I hope not. I have more interest at his price in Tyrese Halliburton than I do in De'Aaron Fox.
Halliburton is awesome.
He's so good.
I watched that whole Sixers game. He had two steals, but like he also just made a bunch of passes way more difficult. He's just all over the place. He plays way
Yeah.
beyond his years. We know he's been closing all these games. Bagley actually got a decent amount of fourth quarter run that last game because Holmes got into serious foul trouble against Joel Embiid, which is why Bagley played 29 minutes. Bagley's also like he drew a couple offensive fouls and then got hot in the third quarter. If Holmes doesn't get into foul trouble, I'm sure they just go back to closing with Halliburton, Fox, Hield, Harrison Barnes, and Holmes. But yeah, Halliburton should play. You know, he's played. He's not
He
starting, but
should
he's
play at
played.
least 26 minutes, I'd say.
No,
That's a little very low
he'll play
on.
way more than that.
Last game, the last game against Philadelphia was the first time in 5 games that Tyrese Halliburton sat out any second in the fourth quarter. He had played 60 straight fourth quarter minutes
That's insane.
up until last game. For and that's a rookie. Like
Yeah.
he is that's really, really impressive.
Yeah. I think he's a perfectly fine kind of mid-range play.
Agreed.
All right, anything else?
No, I think we a lot to digest on this slate. We obviously already have a lot of the injury news, like the Bradley Beal news, SGA, but there's obviously outstanding news like the Isaiah Roby news, the Magic injury report that could open up a lot of opportunity on the slate. So it's something to stay on top of throughout the day.
Joe has the game by game article, which will be up what, overnight, early morning on Friday.
I'll get to it overnight. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe will have to do all 11 games. I'll have the five stats article. Also, real quick, shout out the Fate the Shock podcast. Debro and I are just absolutely plugging away on a bunch of these prospect profiles for the NFL draft. We're also giving away a signed Calvin Ridley jersey. All you got to do is go on Twitter. First, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and review, screenshot it, DM it to the Twitter handle at ChalkFade, and you're automatically entered. We'll be giving that away soon, so make sure you check that out. Other than that, have a good Friday. Get your weekend off to a good start. Win some money here on Friday night in this slate. Have a great weekend. Joe and I'll be back on Monday. Until then, peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.